You're listening for it to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, how is the air where you live? In some states, one-third of all residents live close to a toxic release site. Jen White shares your stories and new reporting into the impact one chemical plant is having on one of West Virginia's only majority black communities. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, a new report says there are a million fewer students in colleges and universities around the country since the pandemic began. According to the National Student Clearinghouse, that's a 6.6% decrease, the largest two-year drop in more than 50 years. The biggest decline is happening with community colleges. They're seeing a 13% drop during the pandemic. Those schools tend to be the nation's least expensive colleges and primarily serve people from low to moderate income families. There are nearly a thousand of those schools in the U.S. One theory was that enrollment at all colleges might pick up the past fall semester, but the Clearinghouse says it appears that many 2020 high school grads have opted to work instead. Community college officials are now trying to figure out how to recruit and retain students, including with financial help and dual enrollment programs with local high schools. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you attend a community college or one of Wisconsin's technical colleges? Are you taking some time off? Are you planning on going back at some point? What would it take to get you to re-enroll? If you faced that decision, or maybe your kid did this year, last year, what was the decision between college, technical college, and work? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We're going to talk about some of the bigger picture stuff around the country in just a bit. First, an update on Wisconsin's technical colleges. Rich Kramer is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Eau Claire. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, you asked around a couple months back with our technical colleges in the state. What kind of things did you hear?
There was a wide variation in the percentage change in terms of enrollment by campus. So the technical college system puts out something called the Fact Book. It's an annual report on enrollment and all kinds of other things. And it had some pretty shocking numbers. From 2020 to 2021, the system saw a decline in enrollment of about 13%, 13.2. But some of the colleges within the system saw humongous declines. So, for example, the Nicolet Area Technical College, 32.8% decline. Madison Area Technical College, MATC, down 26.5%, 19% decline in enrollment at Gateway Technical College. Meanwhile, you had some campuses that only saw a fluctuation of about, 1.5% or so. So really a wide variation. And whenever I would reach out to technical college presidents or other administrators to ask about this, there was still a lot of optimism. People felt that this was going to be a blip in the radar and that it would correct. And I heard that there was a lot of enthusiasm. They would look at applications coming in and say that, there's a lot of pent-up demand, but still some pretty interesting numbers.
Did any of the officials you talked to talk about changing their strategies, having to do things to meet students where they are and try to turn those numbers around, or was it just kind of a wait-and-see approach?
I think higher education overall, with the pandemic and a lot of the face-to-face meetings and campus tours kind of out the window, there's been a lot more personal approach to recruiting students. So I heard that there was a lot of phone calls, real simple, but just getting on the phone and reaching out to applicants, encouraging them to keep, going with the process of applying. So a lot more personal kind of approach rather than just sending out, letters saying you've been accepted, et cetera. They really followed up to keep those kids on track.
Rich, thanks a lot for starting off our conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Eau Claire. We talked to him about the drop in student enrollment in the state's technical colleges, part of a nationwide trend. Martha Parham joins us now for a look at what's happening around the country and what's being done to recruit and retain students. She's Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. Martha, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Rich just gave us the numbers here in Wisconsin. Does that reflect a trend around the country?
Absolutely, it does. We're seeing about a 10% across the board in declined enrollment at the nation's community colleges, which, you know, as he mentioned, is quite alarming.
Can you talk about the role of community colleges here in Wisconsin? We call them technical colleges. In the first place, what is the basic concept and who they're reaching out to?
Oh, absolutely. The official term is they are there to serve those that can benefit. So really, our audience is anyone that can benefit from higher education. Community colleges across the nation serve about 12 million, 11.8 million students across the country. 6.8 million are in credit programs, or what the traditional kind of associate degree, first 2 years of college. And 5 million are in what we call career and technical education programs. So there are a lot of reasons that community colleges exist to serve these millions of students. I think you mentioned they are less expensive. They are credentialed. They're usually local and provide a great many open doors for many students that wouldn't have any other way of obtaining higher education.
COVID-19 shook things up in pretty much all walks of life here in the country. What kind of things do you hear from member organizations about how COVID affected their operations?
Well, I mean, it affected them in a many different ways, not the least of which is many of them had to shut down their college campuses and move everything to this remote online format, which they did. We also saw a great deal, you know, community colleges serve about 30% of the nation's first generation college students. And if you think about that, like many of them don't come from a college going culture. So they're navigating registering, applying, taking classes in this online format when they don't really have any frame of reference for doing so. So many of our colleges were able to find ways, I think those phone calls that were mentioned earlier, one of those ways, to really reach out to the local community and let students know what their options were, what's available to them, what resources and benefits that community colleges could provide. But COVID impacted everything in teaching and learning, in the way students teach and were taught and were learning. Many colleges were also providing technology like computers, laptops, hotspots for Wi-Fi. College parking lots were turned into Wi-Fi hotspots so students could take classes and exams in a socially distanced way. Many colleges provided food to students that had hunger insecurities and housing insecurities. So the colleges across the country have really stepped up to help students provide students the least interruption to their higher education pathway as possible.
Another issue that people have put out as a theory here for why people aren't going back to community colleges now is the pandemic rebound in the economy means wages have gone up, maybe for the same kind of jobs that people going to community college or technical college might have planned on applying for. And they're making the decision, hey, I'm going to take this higher wage now as opposed to going into that educational system now. Is that something you're seeing?
I don't have any data, but it's definitely something that we're hearing. College presidents from across the country are telling us that, you know, they have students that are working and what would always have been considered, you know, kind of entry level jobs that are starting at much higher wages, some up to $20-$25 an hour. And so they're choosing to work. And anecdotally, that's what we are hearing from, you know, kind of across the board.
We're talking about a decline in enrollment at the nation's community colleges and technical colleges. Martha Parham is with us, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. Now we want to hear from you, your story at 800-642-1234. Do you attend a technical or community college? Were you planning on going but decided to take a job during the pandemic instead? Can you talk about what went into that decision? Could it be talking about you? Maybe we're talking about your student, your new high school graduate. If you're in high school, if you're a senior right now, how are you weighing technical college versus going right into the job market? If you work or teach at a technical college in the state, what are you seeing? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about enrollment at community and technical colleges in the U.S. A new report from the National Student Clearinghouse shows that there are 15% fewer students than in the fall of 2019. Officials point toward the pandemic and the economic and social changes of the last couple of years. We're looking at what those colleges are doing now to recruit and retain students, and sometimes retrain students, with Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges, hoping to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you go to one of our technical colleges here in the state or a community college elsewhere? Would you recommend it to somebody maybe just getting ready to graduate high school this spring? Was it a good experience, a valuable experience for you? Do you go to one or work at one right now? Were you on the fence making that decision, or maybe your kid was? Do I go to technical college or do I go right into the job market? What did you weigh? What decision did you make? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Christine on Facebook, who says tech college administrators are asking faculty to do more with less, using adjuncts whenever possible, paying them only for class time, no prep time. Here in Wisconsin, Christine says the union is a shell since Act 10. Invest in full-time faculty, pay them well, and program quality goes way up. Christine pointing toward budget issues, staffing issues. Martha, are these concerns you hear from schools around the country?
Well, of course. Community colleges are the least funded segment of higher education. And, you know, it's kind of in our nature to be all things to all people, whether in our formal mission or not. We really do try to meet the needs of the local community and students that reside in that local community. And that also, you know, means that we try to work with business partners in local communities. And so by doing that, you know, the resources are scarce. Again, it's the least funded sector of higher education. And so it's not unusual that colleges do, you know, whatever they have in their power and within their resources to provide the classes that they need.
Thanks for posting that, Christine, on Facebook. We mentioned, you know, those personal calls that schools are making to students to try to recruit them, to retain them. Have you seen other kinds of strategies, Martha, for how schools are trying to keep the students they might have had in the past or maybe reach out to new demographics?
Absolutely. We are seeing a lot of, you know, calling. We're seeing a lot of staff that was repurposed, for lack of a better word, that maybe had on-campus jobs that were retrained so that they could be that touch point for students and contact them. And we've seen colleges that have actually not just contacted them about recruitment and initial attendance, but also contacted them as they were studying to make sure they were staying on track and they had the resources they need. In other cases, we've seen colleges that provide, that have partnerships with food delivery services and grocery delivery services to make sure that students have, you know, adequate food at home. During this time, a lot of community college students work. In fact, over 70% of community college students work. Many of them lost their jobs at the initial start of the pandemic. And so a lot of these concerns, you know, were alleviated by these actions by community colleges. We've seen a lot of access to healthcare, mental health care, jobs, child care, anything that colleges can do, again, to eliminate barriers to completion, we've seen across the country.
Talking to Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges, talking about a decline over the last couple of years in enrollment in community colleges, technical colleges here in Wisconsin. Still time for you to share your story, maybe your decision, what led you to attend technical college over the last couple of years or to not to. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Martha, I'm glad you mentioned all the students who were working and going to technical colleges. I talked about kind of an either or decision facing high school students. Can you talk about the way community colleges work around work schedules so people can do both at the same time?
Work to maintain flexibility in course offerings, in support services. And really, if there is a silver lining to the pandemic, making those services accessible around the clock when students need them has certainly been one of those silver lining outcomes. We've seen, you know, colleges have moved their classes to online formats. Sometimes they're synchronous, sometimes they're asynchronous. So students can work and then do their classes when they have the time, whether that's early morning, late at night, depending on their schedule. Another thing we've seen is, you know, community college students, a lot of them are adult learners with adult responsibilities, including children, in addition to their jobs. So, you know, we're seeing colleges providing hotspots so that students have access to broadband when they have kids that are at home taking school online while they're trying to work online and be in school online. So colleges have really worked to develop programs and services that help, like you said earlier, meet students where they are and provide them with resources that they need when they need them.
We got a caller at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Almena. Paul, hi.
Hello. I was just wondering if your speaker could comment on the lack of respect that technical colleges receive in things like anytime you have to fill out your higher education last graduate, because they usually have GED, high school diploma, some college, or four-year degree. It never has a place for... Even in the U.S. Census, it doesn't have a place for technical graduates. I've graduated about 38 years ago. I've been very successful with it and am proud of it and just wondered what we can do to get more recognition.
And, Paul, before we let you go, where did you go and what was your course of study that led to good outcomes for you?
I went to what was what is Northland College now. It was WITI when I went, Wisconsin Indian Ed Technical Institute, and then it changed to WITC and then just recently changed its name again. I went for packaging machinery repair. Landed me a job, me and two classmates, a job in Houston, Texas, right out of school. And then I worked in the Twin Cities for a while before coming back to the farm for a few years, and now I've worked at the same plant here locally for over 20 years.
Well, Paul, glad you came back to Wisconsin. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Martha, his first point, no respect sometimes, Paul says, even when you're filling out an online form or something like that for community and technical colleges.
Yeah, I mean, at some levels, we can be the Rodney Dangerfield of higher education. But I think that tide has really shifted, and Paul, I'm really thankful for you for sharing your story. We love to hear success stories. And you know, we've seen, certainly, you know, I've been in Washington for about 7 years now. And in that time, I've seen a great deal of shift toward community colleges being a solution and a provider of solution, not only for higher education, but also in particular, actually, for these career and technical education programs. We're seeing a lot of partnering from very large technology companies that are looking to the community colleges to ensure that students have the programs that will allow them to be successful in work. But in terms of stigma, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't there. There has been you know, a stigma about community colleges is where you go when you don't get into the four-year university of your choice. But I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful because I think parents and students are, let's just say, a little trepidatious about getting into massive debt to send their kids to college. So really, community college is a smart choice. You can go for 2 years, save a lot of money, and then go to the four-year college of your choice and still have that pathway open to you without incurring extra debt. In terms of career and technical education and those certificate programs, again, they're gaining in popularity, and we're seeing that not everyone, you know, needs to have an office job. And so the popularity of programs like welding, carpentry, truck driving, and other career and technical education programs are really taking off. I think it would be interesting to mention that community colleges train about 80% of the nation's first responders. So your firefighters, police officers, EMTs. So community colleges have a place. And while there is still a stigma attached, I think I'm hopeful that that stigma is really losing ground.
Paul, thanks for that call. And Martha, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. We talked to her today about the decline in enrollment at two-year schools around the country. Earlier, we looked at the situation here in Wisconsin with WPR reporter Rich Kramer. Still time for you to share your thoughts, your story, maybe, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, what's the most amazing sports achievement or streak or performance in the history of sports? Our guest has some ideas, and you could share yours. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. If you're not a perfectionist in the kitchen, that's okay. I'm not either. We'll get advice from the author of a cookbook called Good Enough. That's tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, alcohol-induced deaths increased drastically in Wisconsin. We'll look at what the data says and what treatment and prevention efforts could look like. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Republicans in the state legislature have released a set of bills that would limit safety net benefits like unemployment. We'll hear from one of the lawmakers behind that package and someone who studied unemployment over the course of the pandemic. First, a data analysis by the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum found that alcohol-induced deaths in the state rose 25% in 2020. That was the biggest one-year increase in the data since at least 1999, and it follows similar trends seen nationally. And it comes on top of steady increases over the last 20 years. Alcohol-induced deaths are defined by biological causes that stem from drinking, like liver disease or alcohol poisoning. That number doesn't include indirect causes, including drunk driving crashes. We're learning more about what that data showed and what we could do about it, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen people in your life drinking more since the start of the pandemic? More often, higher quantities, or both? Do you blame pandemic stress? Do you see a drinking culture, an alcohol culture, being a problem here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mark Sommerhauser is the Communications Director and Policy Researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
And Ari Brown is Senior Research Associate for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Ari, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us on.
Mark, sometimes it can be tough to grapple with things that come out as data points. Can you give us a sense of the significance of this 25% jump in alcohol-induced deaths over the course of 1 year?
Well, yeah, it's clearly a significant increase. I think you mentioned in the intro, the largest single year increase that we could find in the data going back more than two decades. So certainly something that, you know, within a pretty significant period of time was the largest 1 year increase. as I think was also mentioned in the intro, this was not a new direction for the trend line to be moving in. Prior to 2020, we had seen alcohol-induced deaths in Wisconsin and nationally on the rise. But this is definitely the largest jump that we've seen within the course of a single year. And we thought that was something that we wanted to highlight in this report.
Ari, do we know why alcohol deaths had been trending upward even before the pandemic?
Yeah, this is such a great question and one that I think we're really still searching for, you know, complete answers for. You know, one of the things that we kind of looked at a couple months ago was, so on the policy side, we're able to look at revenues from alcohol taxes in the state as kind of a proxy for how much alcohol is being consumed, or, you know, what those kind of changes look like year over year. And 2020 really represented kind of an anomaly in that data. The spike was quite high in 2020. But you're right, we noticed that basically in every year, you know, since 2000, the rate of alcohol-induced deaths in Wisconsin has been rising. And while 2020 was kind of the biggest spike, as Mark mentioned, this trend has been on the increase. One of the other things that I think it's important to point out as well is that, you know, the alcohol-induced death rate in Wisconsin largely tracked that of the national rate for the first kind of decade of the 21st century. And really only since 2010, 2011 or so has it started to really tick up. And I think we haven't really found great answers as to why that has been happening. You know, some items that have been mentioned include just kind of expanding the overall availability of alcohol. You know, we talked to experts who, you know, mentioned things like the fact that, you know, liquor licenses are largely given out at the local level in Wisconsin. And with over 1,800 municipal governments in Wisconsin, it can be kind of hard to know what is going on behind the scenes there. But yeah, I think it's really something that we're still searching for answers for.
Mark, Ari just mentioned our numbers had kind of separated from national numbers before the pandemic. How did we compare to the nationwide jump last year? I know drinking didn't just go up in Wisconsin, but how did we stack up compared to national numbers?
Yeah, so the increase that we saw here in Wisconsin, just the single year increase, I think, as you had mentioned, about 25%, that was actually very close to the national one-year increase from 2019 to 2020, which was also nationally was actually just slightly above 25%, but very, very close to what we saw here in Wisconsin. I do think, though, it's important to kind of zoom out a bit here and understand that kind of over the long term, especially over the last decade, you know, there has been this national trend of increasing alcohol-induced deaths, but Wisconsin's rate of these deaths exceeds the nation significantly. And it also, over the last decade, has increased more rapidly than it has nationally. So there's an element here of Wisconsin being part of something that's happening nationally, but there's also an element of Wisconsin sort of exceeding the pace at which that national trend is unfolding.
Ari, something that struck me looking at your charts, and I think I'm reading this right, a big separation for Black people in Wisconsin versus Black people nationally when it comes to these alcohol-induced deaths. And it hasn't always been that way. Can you tell us what we've seen?
Yeah, this was one of the things that I think really stood out to us as well. So when you look at the nationwide picture, right around 2000, you have the rate of alcohol-induced deaths for Black Americans dip below that of white Americans, and it has remained below since, and is now there's a pretty big gap between those two groups at the national level. In Wisconsin, those trends were also happening around 2005. The rate for Black Wisconsinites dipped below that of white Wisconsinites. But right around 2011, 2012 or so, you started to see the rate for Black Wisconsinites start to really increase in a way that the national rate was not. And then in 2019, you actually had the rate for Black Wisconsinites go above that of white Wisconsinites, which is completely counter to what's happening at the national level. So that was one thing that really stood out in our data. You know, we noticed that for all of the other racial and ethnic groups that are included in the CDC's data set, the rate of death from alcohol-induced causes looks very similar for each individual racial and ethnic group in Wisconsin compared to the nationwide levels, except for Black Wisconsinites, where it looks completely different.
Talking to Ari Brown and Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, looking at a new report on alcohol-related deaths in Wisconsin, alcohol-caused deaths in Wisconsin. Numbers went up over the last 20 years. Numbers jumped up 25% in the first year of the pandemic. Let's get to some policy ideas. Mark, in this report, you and your colleagues started to look at policy options out there. What kind of things did you see on the table?
Yeah, so we're a nonpartisan organization. We don't, you know, advocate for specific policy measures, but sometimes in a report such as this one, we will say, here are a few options that policymakers could consider, not by any means an exhaustive list, but, you know, certainly some options that could be considered are looking at either reducing, you know, the availability and the access to alcohol in our state, increasing alcohol taxes, which has been shown across the population to reduce the overall amount of alcohol that is consumed within a large population if taxation on alcohol is higher. You know, that said, we recognize some of the political hurdles that would be associated with that if policymakers were to go that direction. So, you know, another sort of possibility that we put forward in the report that we feel like potentially might get a little broader, you know, buy-in from different sides of the political aisle might be to look at, you know, putting more resources toward things like alcohol abuse prevention, intervention, treatment for alcohol abuse and addiction. These are things that obviously are not partisan and you know, we feel like potentially might be able to get a broader buy-in from policymakers across the spectrum.
And Ari, with the research you've done using these national numbers to see what's going on here in Wisconsin, would we be able to measure the impact of the policy changes Mark just mentioned, should they be implemented?
Yeah, I think it's such a great question. And I think it's one that, you know, those who are kind of in the academic space and the policymaking space are always interested in exploring. I think you need to do kind of a lot of more intensive studies. And it's hard to just say, you know, this one state has high alcohol taxes and a low rate of alcohol-induced deaths. Therefore, that's what's causing it. You know, kind of the old adage that correlation does not equal causation. But it's definitely, you know, worth a shot if you're concerned about this issue. And there are definitely, you know, policymakers out there that are interested in this topic. But yeah, it would require a lot more kind of intensive study to draw direct links between any individual policy and what was going on with the alcohol-induced death rate.
We'll leave it there for now. Ari, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And Mark, thanks for being with us.
We appreciate you having us on.
That's Mark Sommerhauser and Ari Brown with the Wisconsin Policy Forum with us today, sharing their recent data analysis showing a significant increase in alcohol-induced deaths here in Wisconsin. Up next, we'll talk to a doctor and public health expert for a look at what we could do to try and reduce the problem. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think alcohol deaths have been going up in Wisconsin over the last 20 years, jumping in the first year of the pandemic? Do you blame Wisconsin's drinking culture in part or something else? Are there policy changes you'd like to see, things that might work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation on alcohol-related deaths in Wisconsin, turning our attention now to how we can reduce those numbers. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we drink too much here in Wisconsin? What would you do to change that if you think we need to do anything? If you moved here from out of state, were you surprised by the amount of drinking that happens here in the state? We hear that sometimes. Do you have a policy solution you'd like to see to try to get people to drink less in the state? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Patrick Remington is an emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
We just heard that report from the Policy Forum about an increase in alcohol-related deaths. And to start, Dr. Remington, this was focusing on direct alcohol cause, liver failure and things like that. I imagine alcohol has a much wider footprint when you throw in alcohol-related traffic incidents or alcohol related to suicide and things like that. Can you talk about the wider impact that excess drinking can have?
Yeah, there's no question that alcohol has a broader impact. This report was really well done. By the way, I think the Wisconsin Policy Forum should be congratulated. In a time of misinformation and science denial that we see in the newspapers nearly every day, they did solid research, good evidence on the trends in these causes of death. So it's really good to begin with solid research and solid science. And the trends probably would be reflected in looking at alcohol-related falls, for example, or motor vehicle crashes. But getting back to their main finding, mm-hmm. there's been a long-term trend of alcohol-related deaths. These are serious causes of death. About 1,000 people now are dying each year in Wisconsin, largely preventable because these are related to alcohol misuse, and probably up to another 1,000 other causes where it's not a direct cause, but a contributing cause.
How do we define excessive drinking to a level that can lead to these alcohol-induced deaths?
Well, again, it depends on the disease outcome. For many of these diseases, for example, cirrhosis or pancreatitis or chronic conditions, that comes from a long-term rate of high alcohol use and misuse. And it seems by their data to occur in the mid-life period, middle-aged people. But on the other end of the spectrum, binge drinking, drinking and driving, that can happen acutely, or alcohol poisoning. So there are these quick effects related to injuries or poisonings. But this report focuses mostly on the long-term chronic effects of excessive alcohol use, and including alcoholism. That's included in the definition of alcohol-induced deaths.
Can you give us a sense of how much drinking is involved in that kind of long-term excessive drinking that we're talking about?
Well, this is they have standard definitions that the CDC uses. Typically, what's called chronic heavy or heavier drinking is more than 2 drinks a day or 14 drinks in a week. But again, that varies by individual. Depends on the type of alcohol and the pattern of consumption. But we think of problem drinking in 2 areas. One is heavy drinking, long-term heavy drinking. And again, for some people, that could be as little as 1 drink a day. But then there's the binge drinking, the drinking that happens in acute episodes. And that's related more to acute problems and injuries.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences, looking at a new report on showing an increase in alcohol-induced deaths in Wisconsin, going up over 20 years, big jump in the first pandemic year. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Sarah is with us in Madison. Sarah, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Sarah?
I just want to say I think it would help if we could just legalize marijuana.
You think that would be an alternative to drinking for some people, Sarah?
I do. I do. I think a lot of people, if that was legal, they would do that instead of drinking.
Sarah, thanks for the call. Dr. Remington, what do you think of that idea?
Well, it's a great hypothesis. In fact, we have natural experiments ongoing in this country. It'd be a hard thing to test that in a laboratory. It's really a population-wide or a sort of a real question. But we have states that have legalized marijuana. And I know colleagues in Colorado who are studying the long-term trends. The theory being that whereas alcohol use increases the risk of cirrhosis and pancreatitis, long-term marijuana use doesn't. It might increase the risk of respiratory problems, but again, the hypothesis is that this states which legalize marijuana may see declines in people who are abusing alcohol, but they'll also see rises in some of the unintended consequences of marijuana use. So it's a good question, and many people have posed that. In fact, there's been an argument for legalizing marijuana because we know the long-term effects of alcohol, and we know that alcohol cannot be illegal. That experiment was tried almost 100 years ago and failed So we need to have alcohol accessible, certainly legal, but we'd like to reduce the harmful effects of alcohol in the population.
Sarah, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Jenny in Elkhorn. Jenny, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say I have lived in a subdivision where we would get together all the time and have get-togethers where we drink and everyone is in their 30s and 40s. And I actually got divorced because of excessive drinking. I was drinking too much, and therefore, you know, I wanted my husband to drink less, and he was not willing. But then I had a friend die from that friend group because of pancreatitis, because of this drinking habit. But we would do it socially, but then you get to the point where you can't be social unless you're drinking. And so it's like this vicious cycle. And if there were programs for parents, like, you know, middle-aged, whether you're a parent or not, but we tend to hang out together, programs that weren't so like AA, you know, like more acceptable programs for people to go to that weren't so looked down upon or like embarrassing for you to say like, oh, I'm going to AA tonight. I think, I don't know, it would provide alternatives for people to be social without drinking excessively.
Jenny, thank you so much for sharing that story. Sorry for the loss of your friend and of your marriage related to drinking. Dr. Remington, first, the central role of drinking in so much of our socializing, I'll limit the borders here in Wisconsin.
Well, I think Jenny's comments are heartfelt and extremely important. What she brings up is so important in this state, well, in the nation, that it is part of our culture. But how do you recognize at the point at which drinking becomes a problem? And she did it so eloquently. I would hope that we would have a healthcare system that could have a conversation with patients about alcohol use, that it's routine, that it's part of screening, and that it's not either you're a non-problem social drinker or an alcoholic. We know that's a spectrum. And early on, evidence shows that a physician conversation with a patient who's beginning to drink more than might be good for their health, that early conversation is called brief advice. Just that brief counseling when people are drinking perhaps two drinks a day, that doesn't seem like a problem, but that could lead to problems. And so I think she made a compelling case for having, I think policy approaches like increasing taxes and reducing access certainly can happen at a population level. But we need a healthcare system where people feel safe, where they can have that conversation. In fact, it should be a routine part of healthcare that people are asked that sensitive issue. And so that early on, before it leads to death or divorce, that physicians and your healthcare team can get involved long before alcoholism becomes a diagnosis and a problem. So it's a really important comment that she made. And I hope that, you know, policymakers don't only look at sort of population-wide strategies, but we think about each patient and what the healthcare system can do.
Thanks for that call. Dr. Remington, just in our last minute or so, we saw this jump during the pandemic. Do you have some thoughts on pandemic-related stress and isolation and its link to drinking?
Well, first, the pandemic exacerbated a long-term trend. We did a study in 2017 and published it in the American Journal of Public Health called The Epidemic of Despair in America. We've had 20 years of despair where people are hurting, either in rural areas or urban areas. People are resorting to alcohol oftentimes as a treatment for underlying problems. So we do have to address the alcohol problem. That can be done in healthcare and through policy approaches. But let's get back to understanding why people seek opioids or alcohol or self-inflicted injuries to solve that epidemic of despair. And I think that's a longer conversation to understand the upstream or the real reasons why alcohol is really a symptom of a problem, in addition to a problem in and of itself.
Dr. Remington, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington, Emeritus Professor at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences. He's with us today looking at ways we can prevent alcohol-related deaths, which have been on the rise here in Wisconsin. Coming up after the news, the president of the state Senate joins the show for a look at a new set of bills that would tighten access to safety net benefits here in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.